Good morning again, and thanks for being here today. And I'm tickled pink, you know. And you're wearing pink today to have Lonnie visit with us. You can come back anytime. We are here. The majority of Sundays we're here at 10 a.m. to sit, and at 11 o'clock for tea. And then again at 11:30 for classes. So you're welcome to come any week. We're here most weeks. There are a few we're not, like last weekend we were not here. But I also want to say a couple words of thanks to the folks who organized the teaching last weekend at the Thurber Center. It was a blast. We had a lot of fun and got to talk about the path to freedom in from the Tibetan Buddhist tradition. So those are recordings, by the way, let's see, Joseph, I think you gave me the video, is that right?
No, pictures.
Pictures, ooh, thank you. But video will eventually be available and audio as well. So so anybody who missed it will be able to be able to catch up with us virtually by recording means. Okay, so now I have to get official and sit on my seat. I'm going to begin with a short prayer. If this is a prayer with which you are familiar, it's the four-line refuge prayer. If this is a prayer with which you're familiar, you can join in. If it's a prayer with which you are unfamiliar, you can join in your heart and in your mind, thinking that you dedicate this session to all suffering beings, that they're all free from suffering and come to awakening. O Sanje Chudan Soji Chonam La Jang Chu Pardu Dani Kyap Suchi Daji Jin Soji Be Sunam Ki Drola Penchir Sanje Trupar Sho Sanje Chudan Sochi Chonam La Jang Chu Pardu Dani Kyap Suchi Daji Jin Soji Be Sunam Ki Drola Penchir Sanje Drupar Sho Sanje Chudan Sochi Chonam La Jang Chu Pardu Dani Kyap Suchi Daji Jin Soji Be Sunam Ki Drola Penchir Sanje Trupar Sho O Palin Sawe Lama Rinpoche Dagi Chi Ur Pe De Ten Shula Kadrin Jimbo Kone Je Son Te Kusum tugging a trip south to soul. Okay, thank you. I have a favor to ask, Jinlane. Do we have the copies of the four dharmas of Gampopa floating around over in the... I'm sorry, I forgot to ask you to get those out. It's been a while since I taught a series of classes, and so I'm in the midst of a series of classes on, I'll take one too. I'm in the midst of a series of classes on the four dharmas of Gampopa. Thank you very much. Thank you. And if you like, you can keep this. Just put a dime or something or a quarter in the photocopy donation box there back, or you can return them, and then when we continue the class, we have one more class after this. We'll have them for the next crew. And this particular set of teachings is one of my favorites because years ago, Kempo Carter Rinpoche gave a teaching on this, and I've never forgotten it. Because deep and profound poetry, like this little four-line verse, it kind of sticks in your head. The idea of short verses like these is to be easy to memorize, easy to recite, and easy to recall. And so, this way, a short verse like this can provide, I would say, days, weeks, months, and maybe even years of teachings, if you remember them. Anybody lacking a copy? Anybody need one? Okay, Ian needs one. Olivia, do you have one? Okay, Ian, you have one? Okay, Ian does have one. Okay, all right, okay. I'm going to read this, and let's all read this together in English so we can get a little teaching right now. Let's do that. Grant your blessings so that my mind and that of all sentient beings may be one with the Dharma. Grant your blessings so that Dharma may progress along the path. Grant your blessings so that the path may clarify confusion. Grant your blessings so that confusion may appear as wisdom. We've already discussed the first two, and now we're going to be on the third one. Basically, what this little four-line verse does is it outlines how we develop ourselves as Dharma practitioners. You could say it's the outline of how we progress as Dharma practitioners. We start with the first verse, grant your blessings so that my mind and that of all sentient beings may be one with the Dharma. The meaning of this verse is that we're saying, may our mind follow the Dharma. May our mind be attracted to the Dharma. May our mind be captivated by Dharma. And this is usually what happens. People begin by being attracted to the philosophy of Buddhism. I have many people say to me, oh, Buddhism, I read about it and I agree with a lot of what I read, and it seems to me that the Buddha taught a lot of the things that I personally believe in. So some folks come to Buddhism with this sense of already being interested in following the Dharma because it's attracted to them and it's meaningful to them. And so the very first stage is, may our mind follow the Dharma. May our mind be attracted or magnetized by the Dharma. And the second one is, grant your blessing that Dharma may progress along the path. So the second one is, may my Dharma, the Dharma that I am learning, may it not just be an intellectual curiosity, a source of intellectual interest, a source of entertainment, intellectual entertainment, may my Dharma become a path. May I actually take the path to myself and use it on myself to begin to change me. And remember how when I first started talking about this in my discussion of the first of these verses, I said that for 15 years I was a hobby Buddhist. I loved the ideas of Buddhism, but I really wasn't ready to have Buddhism change me or the Buddhist teachings change me. And it wasn't until after I really began to practice seriously, I said the first 15 years, okay, maybe not the whole 15 years I was a hobby Buddhist, but a lot of it. I began to allow the practices to change me. I began to do shamatha, the quiet sitting practice, and I began to notice that it was changing me and that it was slowing down my rapid fire thought patterns so that I could actually begin to have some space in between my thoughts, and having space in between my thoughts was like new. And it allowed me to make better choices of where I put my energy as a person. Where was I going to devote my energy in my life? Was I going to go this sort of wild and crazy direction, or was I going to go in the Dharma direction? I began to get the opportunity to make better choices once I started doing shamatha, quiet sitting. Next, when I started doing Tonglen, the compassion practice, that's when things really started to change for me. Because I had always been very self-concerned, as we all are. I mean, part of growing up and going to college and beginning your career and so forth is to become a person, to become an individual, to have your own life. But usually this process makes us so psychologically and emotionally busy that we don't have a lot of time for anything other than us, ourselves. It's only after we gain some comfort with our lives. Perhaps we've married. Perhaps we've gotten someone special in our life. Perhaps we've started our career and feel comfortable in it, and feel like the world is not always chasing us, trying to eat us alive. You know, the idea is that we're no longer in a desperate situation. We can begin to have some comfort. And when we begin to have some comfort, that's when we start looking left and right and say, oh, there are other people in this life with me. My goodness. And as the songsmith wrote, so do you struggle too? Do you struggle too? And we begin to have a sense of compassion and empathy. And this compassion and empathy gives birth to this wish to relieve others from suffering. And that's the second of the developments that I think folks feel in their practice when they start doing compassion meditation, Tonglen, breathing out and thinking they give happiness to the world, and breathing in and think that they remove suffering from the world. And they begin to use their own mental afflictions as fuel for practice. To me, that's when Dharma becomes a path. That, for me, that was really when it happened. That little formula that I quote from the Great Path of Awakening, the Compassion Manual, the Compassion How-To book, it goes, it was written in the 19th century on a 12th century text, so this thing is really old. But the methodology, the simple methodology of when you feel angry, thinking, May my anger contain the anger of all sentient beings, and by my working through this moment of anger, may I and all beings be free of it, and may we all become Buddhas, the complete freedom from anger. Just that one phrase, that one series of short sentences and phrases helped me to get hold of my emotional life and begin to work with it in a constructive, and engage it in a constructive way. So for me, it was through the practice of shamatha and tonglen that my Dharma became a path. And I think it's like this for many of us, that Dharma actually becomes a path. It's not just an object of intellectual curiosity. It's something that we can really grab hold of and use. And then Kenpo Carter Rinpoche, our founder and teacher here, he said, you know, I think, how much of the Nundro practice have you done? He had a whole bunch of us at lunch one time. This was after he'd been coming to the center for, 6 months. And he said, how much of this Nundro practice, this preliminary practice for Mahamudra meditation, how much of it have you done? And I said, well, none. Because you gave the instruction and the reading transmission during my working hours. And there was no way I could get off work to come and see my lama. In those days, I couldn't go up to the boss and say, hey, I need the morning off to go see my lama. I could go to the boss and say, I need to go to the dentist, but I couldn't somehow say, I need to go see my lama. I think if I were to work now, I think I would be better at that. But then at that moment, he said, what are you doing right now? And he left the lunch table and had us, the three of us that hadn't started yet, had us go upstairs and did a meditation and a reading transmission for us. And we started the Nundro practice right then. The first part of taking part of Nundro is taking refuge, and you just recite the refuge prayer thousands of times and take refuge again and again and again and engender bodhisattva motivation again and again and again. It's a little strenuous. But it begins to change you because you have to commit to it. That's the funny thing about commitment. We may hesitate to commit, but once we do, we find that the thing we commit to begins to change us, and sometimes for the better. And that's a little bit about the first two of these four lines. These were written in the 12th century by Gampopa, the great master. And he once said, Gampopa once said, if you read my teachings, you've met me in person. That's great. We need to meet as many Dharma masters as possible. So through these four lines, we're meeting Gampopa today. He said, grant your blessings so that my mind and that of all sentient beings may be one with the Dharma. This also means that may I practice the Dharma as it genuinely is, not as I've invented it to suit me. This is really fun. Because I meet a lot of people who they like part of Dharma, but the other part they're not so crazy about. So they'll change Dharma a little bit to suit themselves. We all do this to a certain extent, but we have to try not to change it too much. Anyway, I better not get into that, because that digression could take me 5 minutes to go through. But the idea is that we follow the teachings as given by our teachers and as given by the texts, rather than how we'd like for it to be. At any rate, so the third of these is grant your blessings so that the path may clarify confusion. This is the outgrowth of the first two. If our mind follows the Dharma, we begin the path. And if our Dharma becomes a path, then we start to change. We actually begin to change. And then if we keep going, our path will clarify confusion. Our path will clarify our confusion. In fact, it will actually change all of the mistakes that we are making about it. I know that's hard to believe, but that's exactly what happens. I see this all the time. I see it in myself. May the path clarify confusion. Here's the way I say it. We all bring what I call our own personal style of confusion into our Dharma practice. You will become familiar with this when I tell you about it. When I was young and in school, I was very ambitious. I wanted to kind of conquer the world. You do, sort of. And then what did I do but go into a competitive field, journalism, where you have to compete with everybody, including yourself, to get things done quickly, well, spell everything right so that you don't embarrass yourself or the newspaper you're working for, and get the story out. So here I was, an ambitious, competitive person going into a field that rewards ambition and competition. What was I thinking? But I had to follow my skill. I had a skill with words, and so I had to follow that skill. It was the only way I was going to make a living, was to take that skill and make a living with it. So I had to do it. But I brought with me this incredible competitive edge and this real ambition. Well, it tripped me up quite a few times. I almost got sued for libel once because I believed somebody who told me lies. In the news business, they would call this person an A-plus source, a person who was well-placed enough in the city government to be able to tell the truth about somebody else in city government. I believed their story, printed it, and got myself in deep trouble. So I was tripped up by my ambition more than once. And don't you know, when I got into Dharma, I brought that confusion, that personal style of confusion, I brought it with me into Dharma practice too. I wanted to read more books than anybody. I wanted to do more meditation than anybody. I wanted to be hot stuff. It's really hilarious. The confusion you take into your Dharma practice. You just don't think of it as being confusion, though. You think of it as being interested in Dharma and deeply involved. You have all kinds of euphemisms that you can use to describe your personal style of insanity. But what's really interesting is that it doesn't work. It doesn't work because Dharma is not about competition. It's not about ambition. And in fact, the teachers frustrate your competitiveness and they frustrate your ambition. Believe it or not, they can see you. They can see you. And they can actually recognize your confusion miles away. And yet they're incredibly patient with it. I'll never forget. One time I talked to Kenpo Carter Rinpoche. And, it wasn't him. No, it wasn't him. It was a Dharma student. It was a Dharma student who talked to me about an interview that he had with Kenpo Rinpoche. At the conclusion of this young man's interview, Rinpoche said to him, "You have such interesting obscurations. Your obscurations are so interesting." And the young fellow told me that afterwards. And I said, "Did you get the message?" And he said, "Not particularly. I kind of think it's great. I'm unique. In other words, he didn't take from it what Rinpoche was trying to give him. He took it as a badge of honor that he was more confused than other people. He thought it made him special, you know. So he didn't take it as advice. He didn't take it as a challenge to look at his confusion and uncover it. He didn't take it that way. He took it as confirmation that he was just as special as he thought he was. I wonder about that sometimes. Anyway, but our teachers can see our confusion. And if we're really lucky, we will open our ears when they give us that kind of information. When they say, do this or do that, read this or read that, try this practice, try that practice. Because they're writing us a note from the future. Like, this is how you will change if you practice. And so, a lot of people read these sorts of adventure stories, time travel adventure stories, where somebody in the future leaves a note for somebody in the past, and it's all very cute. But really, in a way, that's kind of what Rinpoche is doing, isn't he? Our lamas are doing that by giving us advice. They're saying, "I know who you can be. I know you have Buddha nature, and I know who you can be. And if you do these practices, I promise you, your confusion will be reduced and your qualities will be increased." And in fact, this is even mentioned in the 37 actions of a bodhisattva. Is it six? Yes. "When sublime spiritual friends are relied upon, one's faults are exhausted and one's qualities increase like the waxing moon. Holding sublime spiritual friends even more dear than one's own body is the bodhisattva's practice." And so this third phrase, "grant your blessings so that the path may clarify confusion," is basically saying, may we be willing to give up our personal style of confusion, even though it's so familiar to us. My ambition was so familiar to me that I called it something, what's the word? I thought it was something constructive, when actually what it was doing was blinding me to my own faults. It was blinding me to the fact that I needed to give some things up. Now, I'm very fortunate in that my teacher is very compassionate, because sometimes they'll cause you to give up your faults in a gentle way. But sometimes they'll cause you to surrender your faults with a little sharpness. When I was going into three-year retreat, I'm a bit of a pack rat. By the way, my resolution for this summer is to try to get rid of my comic books. So if anybody would like to have like 3 boxes of comic books, see me after. But I'm a bit of a pack rat, so I had sent a number of books ahead so that I would have several boxes of books, and because I had no idea what kind of time I was going to have in the 3-year retreat. I just thought I was going to have a lot of time to read. You don't suppose it was that ambition thing again, do you? I've been working on it for years, and you mean it's still there? Anyway, so Kemper Rinpoche comes into my room, and he says, "What's all this?" And in his English, by the way, so I'm translating from his English. I think he has about 25, 30 words of English, but he uses them really well. And his basic message was, "What's all this? You're not on vacation. This is not a vacation. If you're here for vacation, you came to the wrong place." And he said, "You're only here because there are beings out there suffering. And if you come in here and do retreat, you can help them. That's the only reason you're here. You're not here to read. You're here to practice." And I said, "Yes, sir." And then I said, "Ooh." But, because I'm a tender soul. But it was lovely. It was lovely because it spoke to me. I allowed him to speak to me in a way that would reach me. That's really what that third thing is about. It's about following the Dharma so deeply and practicing so seriously that you're ready for the Dharma to change you. I'm ready. I'm ready. And then if we're ready for the Dharma to help us, then it's really going to start clearing up our confusion. There's a story about the compassion mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum. Lama Yeshe Jamso told this story. He said, Om Mani Padme Hum, the name of Chen, it's a variation on the name of Chenrezig. It's a compassion mantra. All Tibetans learn it when they're children. It's the one mantra everybody in Tibet knows, Om Mani Padme Hum. And people recite it to increase their compassion and purify their negativity and so forth. And Yeshe Jamso said, Om Mani Padme Hum is so powerful, it is said in the texts about it that even if you recite it with bad motivation, it's going to work out. The reason for this is that the mantra is so powerful, it will change your bad motivation. It will change your bad motivation slowly. And your mileage may vary, so I wouldn't try this at home. But I think that this is really the point, is that if we are willing to surrender our faults, if we become aware of our faults and are willing to surrender them, the Dharma will change us. And the Dharma itself will clarify our personal style of confusion so that the Dharma will have a deeper impact upon us. Until we're ready to be changed, it's not going to happen. But once we are, bless you, and once the Dharma begins to change us, then we get encouraged, like, oh, maybe this stuff works. And then we try to surrender even greater faults. And we agree to begin to work on even deeper faults. Oh, guess what? There are deeper faults. A lot of people come to me after they've been practicing Dharma for a number of years, and they say, I really thought I was going to get past such and so, this bad habit I have, or I was going to get past this anger I have, or this resentment I have. And I would say, well, I hate to say this to you, but if I hear anybody say the words, I'm past that now, my ears open up, and I say, look behind you, because it's sneaking up on you from behind. Whenever you say, I'm past all that, it means you've blinded yourself to the possibility that you may still have it. And that it can sneak up on you from behind and just jump all over you when you least expect it. And so from the point of view of Dharma, Dharma works. And especially if we work at it and allow it to. And so that's the third thing we pray for. We pray for, number one, may our mind be attracted by the Dharma. Number two, may the Dharma become a path. Number three, may we surrender our faults and allow the Dharma to change us so that our path clears away confusion. If we're lucky, we're going to keep finding more faults to surrender. And we're going to find more compassion to develop for ourselves and for others. We're going to actually, as one Dharma teacher said, we're going to learn to become more curious than afraid. Some people are afraid of their faults. I think that over time, you'll lose the fear of them and begin to engage them and overcome them. So anyway, I could go on, but that might not be interesting because we've got one more. The last one is grant your blessings so that confusion may appear as wisdom. That's the last in the series. That's a little bit more complex. When I first started reading this four-line verse, that last one really messed me up a bit. How can confusion dawn as wisdom? But if you think about it, it is the inevitable result of surrendering your confusion. It's the inevitable result of surrendering your faults and surrendering your confusion that you begin to even see your Buddha nature in that. Just like our teachers see our Buddha nature in the midst of all of our faults. They see where we can become and they lead us and guide us to that place where we can become. So anyway, that's a little bit about that. I have some time for questions. There's about 15 minutes for questions. And so we have a question microphone. Feel free to use it. And we can maybe have a discussion about, hey, you go get in line.
Good afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, great teaching. I may have on occasion indulged in ambitious behavior, possibly. At one point or two in my life.
You've left that all behind now, right?
Right. Yes, exactly. I've left it all behind. I'm enlightened now. I can go home.
Got it.
Sure. Yeah. That's what I'm here for, I'm a bodhisattva. Back when I first came here, I like to argue with people because I like to think that I read a lot of books and knew something about the Dharma, and my remedy for it, it was just kind of, I don't think anyone told me this, I think I just kind of intuitively did it because I started to realize that I was getting really competitive, I guess for lack of a better term. I don't know if I thought of it exactly like that, but I just knew I wasn't acting the way I wanted to act. Mm. Was, I guess it would be renunciation. I stopped reading books. Mm-hmm. I stopped reading Dharma books. Mm-hmm. And with the idea that I would just come and sit and listen and mm-hmm. just, you know, be a student, I guess, mm-hmm. and instead of trying to be an expert or whatever.
Right.
And I guess my question to you, and I'm kind of putting this out here because this is like the way mm-hmm. I handled it.
Right.
And, you know, as an example, I mean, do you think that was a skillful way to handle it? Like mm-hmm. through renunciation?
I think if you did it the way you said, then
it sounds
right, because I think what I see happening is that for a lot of people, this is me and everybody else, we start out in Buddhism strongly enthusiastic mm-hmm. and read a lot, mm-hmm. but I do think there does come a point when we kind of top out on reading, mm-hmm. And you're right. Sometimes we'll recognize that we've done enough. But the other part of it is if we recognize we have a fault of ambition or competitiveness, and then we set that aside. I think that's healthy. Because if you look at the techniques that are taught in the compassionate literature and the mind training tradition, they're kind of hard-nosed. Like, if you're attached to something, put it down. So,
Speaking of which, I need to go back and read that.
Yeah, I tell you what, you know, what's so interesting, yeah. But you know what, that's what's good. See, that's what's good. See, we get our enthusiasm for specific teachings gets re-energized.
Sure.
And that's a healthy thing.
And then I'm also thinking of Milarepa's exchange with that one.
With a scholar?
Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah, Milarepa, wow.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. No, yeah. I appreciate it. Thanks. Other things that people might want to talk about. Yeah.
Thank you for the great teaching. I've found that when I do my practice and really get into it, it does change me. And for me, it'll create kind of periods of rawness and kind of because as like things become aware or distance grows. So something I'm working on is being able to say to people, I'm sorry if I'm grumpy right now or don't want to hang out or don't, or you're, or chit-chatting is kind of stabbing my head.
Sure.
You know?
No, I get
like, it. Like, I'm doing my practice and I'm kind of in a zone. So I guess what I've been trying to work through is I will change, but then the world around me hasn't changed. And it'll still expect me to be like... Bonkers or whatever.
I got it.
So I'm trying to work on finding a way to not be rude, but...
I'm just like in a space right now.
I'm
so glad you brought this up. I have a lot of friends who are in 12-step recovery, and they kind of go through the same things, because in 12-step recovery, you're trying to recover from addiction to something, you know, alcohol or substances or habits or behaviors or whatever that are just unhealthy. And by letting go of those old habits and things, you will become non-functional from the point of view of people who are still engaging in those behaviors. And so there's a little pain involved in getting this sort of escape velocity from those negative friends, because in 37 Actions, it says when negative companions are associated with, your three poisons increase, and the activities of listening, pondering, and meditating decline, and love and compassion are extinguished. Abandoning these negative companions is the Bodhisattva's practice. And there are ways to abandon them without them feeling bad, so you're right on there. And I remember a conversation I had with Tenzin Shoni, the previous president of KTD, our home monastery. And I said to him once, I said, I'm beginning to lose my taste for nightclub life and partying and gossiping. And he said, I said, is that all right? And he said, it's really normal. A lot of people who do Dharma practice go through this. He said, because you're finding out what's important in your life and what's not important and what you want to do with your life and what you don't want to do. So he said, I think it's completely normal. But of course, then he didn't follow up with any tips about how to talk to the people you've left behind. And in this book, it says you should change your inner behavior, but on the outside, you should act naturally. Change your inner motivation, but act naturally. That's in Great Path of Awakening. But what it says is you should make your behavior like your friends in the Dharma, not your worldly friends, you know. And so it that becomes a little more of a challenge. So it seems to me that I think the way you're going about it sounds right, where you're just basically saying, as my therapist once told me, she said, when you're not drinking and all your friends want you to, it's because they feel bad. They think that you're judging them by not participating in their behavior. So just tell them, I don't feel like having a drink. Don't feel like it. And they can't argue with how you feel. And you can just basically say, I don't feel like this, or I don't feel like doing that. But I love you guys, and let's have lunch. You know, that kind of thing. You know, if you want to see your friends and to work with them and to meet them in a different setting, that's nothing wrong with that. You can also do what I do, and I tell them I'm getting old, and I just don't have the time, you know. I don't have the energy to be crazy, you know. But so I hope that's helpful. Because we have to detach with love. That's what our friends in 12 Steps say. We have to sort of detach from that old life with love, not with any kind of hatred, because there's no point to that. There's no point to that. There's no benefit from detaching with some kind of resentment or a nastiness, you know. But I understand what you're going through, and it does appear to be a normal phase in Dharma, because you're finding out what's really important to you and that you're going to go for that thing that's really important to you. Something that, as you were talking, a side issue came up to me, because we talked about ambition. But you know, the opposite, I was thinking, it was like a leftover from your question. And right as you were saying, oh, I said, well, there's one leftover from this question. And that was that for some people, it's not ambition they have to surrender, but lack of self-value, lack of self-regard. I meet people sometimes who feel a lack of self-regard. They feel that they're not worthy or they're not good. And they have to surrender that as well, because that also is unhealthy. It's like ambition inverted, you know. And so they have to find a way to accept and care for themselves as though they were their own son or daughter or brother or sister. I frequently will tell people when I'm doing Dharma interviews, And they feel badly about themselves, or they express that kind of feeling, I'll say, look, if you were your own brother or you were your own sister, what would you say to you? And that changes their attitude. Or what if you were advising your nephew or your niece who you loved? What would you say to them? That's how you should look at yourself. And again, Dharma is about evening us out. If we're overly ambitious, we got to come toward the middle. If we're overly self-denigrating, we got to come back toward the middle. And Dharma requires that we do that, that we give up whatever is unhealthy and take hold of whatever is healthy. So anyway, that's just something that occurred to me from this. There's time for one or two more, if there's one or more out there. We got one. I'm losing track of my things here.
Oh, Kathy, thank
Hello.
You for teaching.
It's great.
I might have two questions. I'm mm-hmm. not sure. How do you find balance between your Dharma practice and your work, I guess, mm-hmm. like your career? And sometimes you might want to, like on the outside, if you're working at something, like for instance your career, people are very competitive and you want to succeed.
Right.
So it's like diligence.
Right.
You want to improve your craft. Mm-hmm. And you want to be successful at your job.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to do that, you have to be competitive.
Right.
And ambitious.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you find balance?
Yeah. No, I really appreciate this question, and this will be the last question based on time. I think it really, I was talking to somebody earlier today, and I said, you know, as human beings, we're really good at going to extremes. We're like super good at going to extremes. We can either go to one extreme or we can go to the other extreme, but it's the middle we need practice at. You know, we need to really work because we've never really been good at it. I don't know. I haven't met too many people who come out of their college years saying, oh yeah, I've got balance on everything. You know, I know very few people who have it. So the fact that you're continuing to work on it is really admirable, and it's the right time. So you're asking this question in the right way at the right time. So that's a good start. The answer, however, is that it will take time, and there will be some trial and error as you attempt to find the right balance. But I think two things will help. One of them is compassion, and the other is kindness. Because the practice of mind training, where you're attempting to internalize the wish to be of benefit to all sentient beings, that wish is perfect for a person who is living in the world and is in a career. Because what that does is it erases the invisible line between practice on this side and your career on the other side. You know, because we build this like wall between our practice and our career and family and so forth. We build a wall thinking somehow practice is better and career and family not so good. But it's not like that. And that's why this kind of practice, they call it mind training. It's the compassion practice in the Great Path of Awakening. It's Kempo Rinpoche has said that it's the ideal practice for people who have family and career. They're very busy with family or they're very busy with career. It's the ideal practice because it's about the things that the other people can't see. Your coworkers and your family cannot see that you're working on compassion. They can't see that you are working on benefiting others. They can't see it, but you know you're doing it. So it's not showy, so you don't look different. But you're really making a change in how you think and feel. You're building empathy for other people, even the people with whom you're competing. And the kindness portion comes as a result of practicing this. So I would recommend first thing is to add Tonglen to your everyday practice if it's not already part of your practice. You can time it with your mala. Make sure you do a little bit of shamatha every day, in-breath, out-breath, you know, for like 5 minutes or something. And then what I tell people to do is take their hand malas or their neck malas and then use it as a timer. Count off like a quarter mala. And then in-breath, out-breath, move a bead. In-breath, out-breath, move a bead. And do Tonglen for about a quarter mala. It's about 2 to 3 minutes. Imagining that as you breathe in, you remove suffering from yourself and all beings. And as you breathe out, you give happiness to yourself and all beings. And particularly the people with whom you are competing and the people who you feel badly about. And, you know, doing it for those beings especially. And then, if you do that, then when you get up from your seat, take that with you and think when you go into a business meeting, may I benefit everybody in this place of business. May I benefit them all. May even just seeing me make them happy. May even just hearing my voice make them feel confident, make them feel happy. And bring that feeling with you. And when you bring that feeling with you, it will read to other people as sincerity and kindness. And they will trust you. Even if they compete with you, they will trust you. They will know that you are good for what you say. You know, what you say, you mean. And what you say you're going to do, you do. And so forth. And as you become trustworthy, you will advance without having to compete in an angry or negative way. You see what I'm saying? There's this old saying from baseball, nice guys finish last. Who was that? Some baseball star said that. But it's not true. And they've proved it over and over again. It's not true. Nice guys do not finish last. People who are kind, who are good for their word and truthful, they succeed. They succeed. And if you don't succeed in such a workplace, it might not be the workplace for you. If they prefer people who lie or people who, you know, you may need to find a different spot. So I worked in journalism. There's a little lying that goes on in journalism. I don't know if you knew about this. I was told to deceive people more than once by my boss. And lucky for me, he quit. Because I never felt good about it, and I never did it again. There was one very big story I was working on. They told me to lie to the person I was interviewing about what it was all about. I did. And that person hated me. And you know, I have to tell you, I never did it again because it was wrong. And because I was ambitious and wanted to please the boss, I did what the boss said rather than thinking about what was best for everybody in the situation. So sometimes, you know, you have to learn the hard way. I did. So it will take time. So I would say do some practice of Tonglen every day to give you a baseline feeling of compassion for yourself and compassion for others. And then think when you go into any business meeting, think, may I benefit everybody in this meeting? May they come to trust me and have confidence in me. And then just keep going in that direction. So hopefully that will help some. I know, competitiveness. Oh, I couldn't do it, by the way. I couldn't do it. I was invited to go and work in a larger newspaper in a larger city. I couldn't do it. I just couldn't because it wasn't worth it. I couldn't. So I never made as much money as I could have. But it's okay. That was not what my life was about. I used to joke with people, I'm working my job so I can finish Nundro. That's what I would tell people. I mean, you know, I just have to work at my job so I can finish Nundro. So it was really weird, but yeah, it's kind of what I did. Well, we have to stop here for now. I'm so appreciative of these questions. And I'm so appreciative that you're working on these things in your everyday life. Keep going. Don't quit. If you have additional questions, I'm staying behind for another 15 minutes or so. If you have additional questions you weren't able to ask today. While they're cleaning up, I'll hang out. Let's mentally dedicate the merit of this session. By the way, if you want to, you can leave these papers on your chairs or your seats, and that will pick them up after. We dedicate the goodness of this session to all beings who suffer. May they all see their confusion and use their dharma to help them see their confusion and overcome it. May dharma itself become a path that clears away confusion all by itself. May the self-fixation of all beings be dispelled by the brilliance of compassion and bodhicitta. We dedicate the merit with this thought in mind. Okay, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you.